Hello and welcome to Ag PhD Radio. I'm Darren Hefty.
And I'm Brian Hefty. Thanks for joining us today. Got a great show for you. It's Farmer Friday. We'd love to hear from you all throughout the show. Our phone lines will be open. Our number here is 844-44-AG-PHD. That's 844-442-4743. You can email us radio@agphd.com or send us a note on Twitter, AgPhD Media, Darren Hefty, or Brian Hefty. We're going to get to the AgPhD mailbag in just a couple minutes here, but before we do, Darren, this morning we were talking about Sclerotinia white mold that we have in soybeans. What's it look like out there? What do you think?
Yeah, it's really a bummer when you see white mold. Especially, we put a lot of effort into stopping white mold this year, and I think one of the things that I'll say, past history definitely plays into this. If you've got fields that have had it before, it's harder to fight in those areas than a field where it hasn't been. But when you've got this kind of growing condition where we've got great big beans, they canopied early, tremendous fertility, and
lots of rainfall,
pHs that are, I would say, too high. You know, even the upper sixes into the low sevens, it's just too high for one big reason. It limits micronutrient uptake.
Yep.
We've seen micronutrients like manganese, when we lower our pH into the upper fives to low sixes, we get a lot more manganese availability.
Okay, so here's the problem that we had. We were getting water treatment lime, which is great. It's free. The problem is the guy spreading it could only put on 6 tons. Well, we told him to stay out of certain areas of fields, and that was fine. But there were some areas that only needed 3 or 4 tons. Well, they got 6. So instead of our pH going up to 6.3, 6.5, in some cases it went to 7 or 7.1. So it's not terrible or anything. But what Darren's talking about with this micronutrient thing, that is where it does come into play. So, I mean, we'll get it corrected. I'm not that worried about it, but I mean, for the long term. But in the short term, yeah, we got a problem. You know, the other thing that we tried 3 years ago now, we went out in the fall after we'd had some white mold in some spots. We sprayed Contans. Problem with the Contans is it was bad and we didn't know it. If you have Contans that sat in a warehouse all summer, it's dead. Virtually 100% dead. You have to keep that product frozen. It's a biological. It's a fungus that will eat the sclerotia. It will destroy the sclerotia that's out there. And so, Darren, you just made the comment about past history. Well, I can eliminate that past history. Well, I shouldn't say eliminate. I can dramatically reduce that past history issue if I put Contans out there, but I have to have good product. And we had some carryover product that we didn't know it had to be frozen, and the product only lasts 2 years even if it is frozen. So that's the whole problem. You've got to take frozen product, or it's got to be really, really cold up until right before you want to spray it. Then you go spray it out there, and it's a fantastic product. But if you got bad product, obviously it does no good. All right, let's get to the phone lines here. We got Cale calling from out in Indiana. Hi, Cale. How are you?
Great. How about you guys?
Doing excellent. What can we do for you today?
Well, I got a question about hydric soils. I've got a very small patch of what would be determined as a wetland, but it's not. I'm not farming it. I just kind of want to make it into a yard that I can mow.
Mm-hmm.
It's definitely hydric. You know, I have plans on putting some tile in it. It's got existing tile in it. It just doesn't do well enough. But I'm curious what a guy can do to change it from hydric to aerobic, like the surrounding soil.
Okay, so one of the interesting things that you said there, Cale, is it has some tile in it already. If there's already existing tile, so let me first talk about the NRCS and wetland determinations. If there's already tile in there, and there has been for many, many years, they can't call that a wetland. There's no way. What they're going to call it is prior converted. Anyway, you would then have the ability, even if you wanted to stay in the government program, to go out and fix that tile, and that hopefully would take care of it. Okay, so let's just say that we're talking about something totally separate from the government program or anything else. So we take that totally out of the equation. And literally all we're trying to do is you just say, hey, I've got a soil that is holding too much water. It's, you know, you may call it hydric or whatever, but it's just got too much water. And that means that there's no oxygen in the soil. So everything is dying, everything from microbes to the plants. We got salt levels building up. We got soil pH. It's going up. What I'm going to tell you is we want to get that water table down to at least 3 feet, if not even 4 or 5 feet, depending on the situation. But you can do that simply by putting drain tile out there. Now, the next factor that we're looking at is how close together do those lines need to be. And like he was just saying, if it's, let's say, some type of perennial grass, personally, I just as soon have those tile lines deeper. If I have those tile lines at 2 to 3 feet, we've done that before just to see what would happen. Well, in 1 year's time, there were so many perennial roots in there that it will start to catch some dirt as it's coming through. And unless you've got a lot of slope, you're going to end up filling that line in. I don't know how long it's going to take, maybe 5 years, maybe 10 years, something like that. And you're going to have to go replace it. So the deeper you go, the less chance there are for mini roots to get down there. So that's probably what I would do. If it was me and I owned it, I'd put some tile in at 5 feet deep or something like that. The heavier the tile or the heavier the soil, the closer together those lines need to be, and you can solve that problem. Does that kind of answer your question there, Cale?
Yeah, so it's got old tile in it. It's just not deep enough from what I understand. I'm not really allowed to make it any deeper, but I can modify what's there.
How deep is it?
Oh, but it doesn't go far enough into the wet spot, I guess.
Oh, okay.
Say, but it's,
gotcha.
I mean, it's right on the edge of the wet spot, and it's only about 2 foot deep there, anyways.
Yeah. Yep. So, yeah, then I guess you're going to have to work on that situation with NRCS or anybody else, approvals, that kind of thing. But all I can tell you is if you were able to have tile in there and just keep the water table down, that's all we're trying to do, you're going to have more oxygen in the soil. You can have good root growth, good microbial growth, and a nice healthy soil. All right, well, stay tuned. We've got more Ag PhD Radio right after this.
Farmers, you put a lot of money into growing the best crops possible every year, so it only makes sense to make sure every bit of that ends up in your tank. Estes Patented Concaves stop rotor loss with less grain damage. Best of all, they work in all crops. No more changing concaves. Call 765-650-4131 or visit EstesPerformanceConcaves.com and get what you harvest. That's 765-650-4131.
No two seasons are the same, so you need your crops to rise ready for whatever's in store. Now, there's one simple decision that provides coverage on four fronts. The Acceleron portfolio offers protection against disease, insects, nematodes, and even moisture or nutrient stress. In the fight against the unpredictable, rise stronger with Acceleron seed treatment products. Learn more at AcceleronSAS.com/rise-ready. Performance may vary. It's important to use proper PPE when handling treated seed.
You don't settle. You're driven. You're committed. You're a farmer. And you are relentless. Micogen Seeds is relentless too. We won't stop. We never settle. We don't back down. We work hard and we work smart to get to know you and your farm and make sure you get the right seed on the right acres. See for yourself at Micogen.com or talk to your local Micogen Seeds dealer and let us prove our relentless dedication to you.
Farming in the dark? We've flipped the switch on. More insights, more options for more farmers. Introducing Smart Insight daily satellite imagery, on-farm weather stations, crop modeling, scouting, alerts, available in more locations than ever before. Smart Insight, the only crop monitoring and digital agronomy solution with daily insights. Visit farmersedge.ca for details.
You're listening to Ag PhD Radio, broadcasting from the Morton Studio today on Farmer Friday. Taking your calls and questions all throughout the show at 844-44-AG-PHD. Or you can email us a question, radio@agphd.com, or find us on Twitter, Ag PhD Media, Brian Hefty, or Darren Hefty. Let's go down to Mississippi. You got Jeremy on with us. Jeremy, how's it going?
Doing well. Yourself?
Pretty good. Okay, your corn crop's a lot farther along than ours. Where are you at right now?
We had some corn that got blown over. We had some 80-mile-an-hour winds about 2 weeks ago, right when we were just at Black Layer, or right before Black Layer, we had some about 400 acres get blown snapped in half. Big crop, so we jumped in right when with moisture around 30%, and I would say we were able to pick up almost the entire crop off the ground.
Wow. So what are you doing with it then at 30%? Are you just feeding it right up, or what are you going to do?
Well, we're putting it into, we don't have on our operation, we don't have a corn dryer because our corn normally dries down naturally. And we've talked about getting one, but we have bins with sterols that we dry our rice with. So we'd fill them up about a third full and keep our temperature no more than 10 degrees an outside temp. And that kept us from sweating and took about 5 to 6 days to dry it down to a good moisture. And then we just shipped it out and onto the elevator.
Outstanding.
So it was, it's nice to get a little bit out. We do have a couple elevators that we could ship to with dryers that we were able to ship to, but we were able to get all the down corn out while the stalk was still green and has still had some good strength to it to pull it into the combine.
Yeah, that is great. You know, that's not the ideal situation for sure, but making the best of a bad deal is pretty good. So yeah, to get about 100% harvest out of that is fantastic. And you know, it is fortunate that the wind came as late as it did, that it wasn't a little bit earlier where it would have hurt pollination. We've sure seen that sometimes.
Yes, and the yield was great. I think that was one of the reasons we had so much fall down. Is not great big ears on a stalk in 80-mile-an-hour winds late season. You know, certain varieties held better than others, but we're still looking at a really good crop. You know, we'll count it once we get it all in, but from what the yield monitors are telling us, we're sitting on a above average crop, close to a record corn crop. So we're happy with that.
That's fantastic. Hey, since you're in Mississippi, what's happening with rice right now?
We're probably within 7 days about starting to drain our rice fields. So we're about 10 days to 2 weeks after we drain, we'll start harvesting rice, which was kind of nice to get some of the corn out because there's a good chance we'll be harvesting rice, corn, and soybeans at the same time, which can make for a logistical nightmare.
Sounds like you aren't going to get much sleep.
No. It went from, it was our cotton crop. We laid it by about a week later, and that's usually when we have from lay-by to corn harvest, usually where we get our summer break, and that was about 7 days. So then we jumped right into getting combines and grain bins and all of our fall equipment ready. So, but the team pulled together really hard and put some hard weeks in there. Usually when we have time off to get relaxed, they pushed hard to get everything ready. So we harvested for about a week so far, and things have worked out really good.
That's fantastic. Yeah, lots of work coming up. Everybody thinks up in the north where we're at, oh, man, it'd be fun to be a little further south. But when you got multiple crops coming all in at the same time, that's not going to be easy for you either. Well, hey, Jeremy, stay safe through harvest season, and we wish you the best.
Thank you all. Have a good day.
We've got Kenny with us down in Kansas right now. Kenny, how's it going today?
Oh, pretty good. How you guys doing?
Not too bad. What's going on with your soybean crop right now?
Oh, we got them anywhere from just pre-bloom to full-on filling the pods.
Right. So fungicide timing on some of this?
Yeah, I was kind of curious about that. I didn't know when the... We tried fungicide one time, didn't really see a whole lot out of it, but that was several years ago, and it was pretty pricey, and, you know, stuff's come down considerably in price now.
Sure. What do you have? Do you have frog eye in your area? Do you have any disease issues normally?
not get a little bit of rust.
Okay.
A little bit of I can't think what it's called, but turns the seed purple.
Oh, you bet, Cercospora.
Yeah.
Okay, so let's look at this a couple different ways. Let's say that you have no disease. Let's say it's going to be a fairly dry year, and you're just thinking about plant health. At that point, we really like to shoot for R3, which is when we first start seeing pods. So we're at a full bloom on the plant, and we're just starting to see some pods. That's what the research has shown as the optimum timing if you're making one pass just for plant health. Now, if you've got lots of disease pressure, we'd like to be out there. What would you say, Brian, a week ahead of the disease just to be on the safe side, because fungicides are more of a preventative than a curative?
Yeah, at least a week ahead. You know, and a lot of guys, if they're going to spray soybeans just one time, R2, R3, I usually tell guys, like, when I see the first pod in the field, that's probably the time, if we're talking plant health and the best chance for overall disease package, if you're in an area that doesn't normally have a tremendous amount of disease, or if you've never sprayed fungicide before. For some of us where we've got bad diseases like white mold, I mean, we have to start right at R1 as soon as the flowers are out there, and then follow it up every 2 to 3 weeks with continued applications. Otherwise, it's a complete disaster.
Yeah. We this year we're fairly dry this year. Last few years we've been a little bit wetter, but this year we're kind of way behind on rainfall as far as average rainfall amount goes.
Sure.
We're hanging on by timely rainfall, but not an abundance of rainfall.
Yeah, it's going to be important here the rest of this summer to catch a couple, and you can still fill a lot more pods if we're in that stage with some of your first crop beans anyway of filling pods out at this point. We really would benefit from that rain late season. But with your pre-bloom flowers, we got a little more time. You know, soybeans love sunlight, and they generally do pretty well in heat. So none of that's going to be playing against you too much, but catching timely rain will be good. Now, I understand you're curious about sugar a little bit as well.
I'd heard you guys talking about that. I caught a show one time, you guys talking to Kip Coulters about it, and
yeah, you know,
kind of got in on the tail end of it. I had never heard of that until then.
Yeah, Kip and some of the other super high yield guys that we've talked to on soybeans like putting a pound of sugar in every time they're doing it. Some are using, you know, certain types of sugar. They're very fussy about that. Others are just buying, you know, regular table sugar and running with that. And it generally mixes fairly well in with the water, so it isn't an issue that way. But some of the guys think they're seeing some benefit. It hasn't been a standard practice on our farm, although, you know, we will try it from time to time and just see if we see anything different. We really haven't seen much for yield improvement.
Only once ever have we seen any yield gain. But we've tried it many times.
Oh, okay.
So I don't know. The high yield guys talk about feeding the microbes.
You know, that's the thing. It doesn't cost much to try it. And basically, they're trying to feed microbes. But
I see.
I don't know. If you want to try it, you sure can, Kenny. And it mixes in our experience with just about anything we've done. I don't think we found a time that it didn't mix well. It worked fine when you're putting on insecticide, when we were putting on fungicide, herbicide, foliar feed, no problem.
Wait a second, though. When you say no problem, we don't advise letting it sit in the tank very long or anything. If it sits in the tank for a week or something like that, then you start to have maybe some mold growing. You can have some issues in there. So you can mix it in.
Right.
Just get her sprayed out.
Right.
All right.
Yeah, I can imagine make a sticky mess.
Yep.
Yeah. Other than that, I was out. Oh, we've had some bugs. Had quite a bit of bug pressure this summer. We had to spray all of our double crop beans just about as soon as they was coming out of the ground. Webworms was eating them about as fast as they could.
Yeah, I was just out in western Nebraska yesterday. We saw a variety of bug issues too. Hey, Kenny, we got to take a short break here. Stay tuned. You're listening to Ag PhD.
Grow corn that pays you back for your investment. Headline Amp Fungicide from BASF is the smart choice. It consistently delivers plant health and disease control benefits like increased stress tolerance. You get more yield from an antassel application than any other fungicide, with best-in-class preventative and post-infection disease control. Grow smart with BASF and Headline Amp. Talk to your retailer today. BASF, we create chemistry. Always read and follow label directions.
Farming in the dark? We've flipped the switch on. More insights, more options for more farmers. Introducing Smart Insight daily satellite imagery on farm weather stations, crop modeling, scouting, alerts available in more locations than ever before. Smart Insight, the only crop monitoring and digital agronomy solution with daily insights. Visit farmersedge.ca for details.
They don't leave nicely. When worms and aphids attack your crop, fight back with Nudrin. Nudrin is a powerful insecticide that's applied after your crop has emerged. Its quick knockdown and almost immediate control stops worms and aphids in their tracks. Learn more about Nudrin and how to protect your crops from in-season invasions. Visit us at rotamnorthamerica.com. That's rotamnorthamerica.com.
One thing growers need to succeed is freedom to choose what they put in their fields. That's why FMC Freedom Pass Agronomic Rewards make it easy and economical to pair your favorite seed brand with products proven to protect crops throughout the season. Choosing Authority brand herbicides and other proven FMC products pays more than ever before. Calculate your potential incentive at fmcagus.com/FMC Freedom Pass today. Always read and follow label directions. Authority brand herbicides are not registered for sale or use in California.
White mold on soybeans is a costly problem. Andiamo fungicide from SipCam Agro is a powerful and affordable solution. Here's why. Andiamo moves rapidly throughout the plant, providing fast and lasting control. And Andiamo features a low use rate, broad disease spectrum, and a better return on investment than other fungicides. For best performance on white mold, apply Andiamo at first bloom. Learn more about Andiamo fungicide by visiting SipCamAgro.com or calling 877-898-9514.
In 1949, Morton Buildings constructed our first machine storage building to establish our bond with the farming community. Since then, our relationship has grown, and so have our product offerings. From the smallest specialized operation to the largest agricultural enterprise, we understand the needs of your business and continue to evolve to meet industry demands. Plus, when you build a Morton building, you're backed by the strongest warranty in the business. To learn more about the Morton Advantage, visit us online at mortonbuildings.com.
Back, you're listening to Ag PhD Radio. It is Farmer Friday. That means we're taking your calls and questions all throughout the show at 844-44-AG-PHD. Got Scott on with us now up in North Dakota. Scott, how's it going?
Well, it's going pretty good. We're harvesting spring wheat today, and it's in the mid-90s today, and it's going to be in the hundreds for the next couple days.
How's the spring wheat yield for you?
Spring wheat yields are real variable. It depends upon where the rain hit. We've been surviving on surface moisture for the last year. And, you know, the fields we're on now, right now, where we've got some rain there, it's in the mid-60s.
Oh,
and
yep.
You go 3 or 4 miles away, it gets down into the mid-30s.
Oh, wow. Yep.
So our biggest problem we got right now is most of the soybeans up here are virtually dying. I mean, we haven't had a rain now since about the 5th or 6th of July, and there was no reserve moisture. And I'd say that's pretty typical, you know, all around my area anyway, and most of western North Dakota.
Yeah, the one thing with soybeans that I'll tell you, if you're looking for any bright spot there is, soybeans really like sunlight. They do pretty well with heat. You have in drier, warmer conditions, you have less disease. And we've had it I'll just tell you on our own farm in 2012, for example, there were a lot of guys that in July were about ready to tear up their beans. And we went 3 months with no rain in 2012. And we ended up with some good August rains, really starting about now. I think we had a little bit the first week, but I mean, it was mainly mid-August. And we ended up with 60 bushel soybeans. So, and everybody's going, what in the world? How could they possibly do that? Soybeans do hang on pretty well through the middle of the growing season. So I guess let's hope for some rain and quick. and maybe it might turn out okay. But like I say, you should have less disease in there and that type of thing. And sometimes just that alone does really help those beans.
You know, if we could catch an inch of rain or something now, because they recover by morning and then the leaves start turning by mid-afternoon. If we get an inch of rain within the next, 5-6 days, we'd get, maybe 25, 30 bushel out of them.
Yeah.
But if we don't see something here pretty soon, it's going to be as big a disaster as a USDA report.
Oh, that's too bad. Yeah, and, unfortunately, there's not a whole lot, that any of us can do as farmers or agronomists. If you don't have irrigation and we're not getting blessed by Mother Nature getting some rain, that's just the way it goes some years, unfortunately. We've been in that same kind of spot, too, sometimes, but we'll just have to pray you get a little bit of rain here, and maybe it won't turn out too bad.
Okay, well, thanks a lot.
You bet. Thanks, Scott. Thanks for calling in. Appreciate it. Yeah, it's one of the challenges always, Darren. A lot of people. It's funny. I talk to a lot of non-farmers, and they say, "Boy, I'd like to farm, and that'd be kind of fun working, out in the countryside and everything else." But you're always subject to what happens in terms of that weather, rainfall, heat, humidity, everything else, or lack of humidity. But one of the things, just getting back to Scott's call there, and when we think about lack of moisture, I think a lot about fertility. We talk about this on a fairly regular basis here on the show, but we've got to do everything we can, obviously much earlier in the fall and the spring and throughout the growing season, to make sure our plants are fed as well as possible. Because if your crop starts running short on any one nutrient, it's going to start pulling water in, even if it doesn't need the water yet. So in effect, that crop does become a water waster. And that's something, I'm not saying that we wouldn't have more yield if we had timely rains, if we could dial it up exactly right. Of course. But what I am saying is, the better job you can do on fertility, the better job you can do in building soil organic matter, all those types of things, it can help. It can help in these drier years. We've seen it ourselves on our own farm. We've worked with farmers all over the world on this same type of thing. So, we can only control as farmers the things we can control. We can't do anything about the weather. So we've got to do the very best job possible with fertility, weeds, insects, diseases, all those types of things. Because if the plant has less stress from all of that, then it actually can tolerate a little more drought stress. All right. Anything else, Darren, that you want to talk about before we get into the Ag PhD mailbag?
Nope. Let's jump into that mailbag time here.
Before we do, I guess.
Well, okay, you weren't done talking.
Well,
I see.
Well, no, I am done talking, but Alex can't hit the button for our mailbag music, so we'll get to that in just a second.
Because we're getting a call right now. Let's get back to the phone lines here. We got Robin in Pennsylvania with us. That was pretty rough, Robin, but glad you're sticking with us.
That's okay. How you guys doing?
Pretty good, pretty good. What's going on in Pennsylvania?
Pennsylvania, I am just waiting for a little bit more weeds to germinate in my double crop beans, and then I'm going to go out and spray them. The corn, the 103, 105-day corn, pretty much fully dented now and looks pretty good. We had a pretty good year so far. 2 weeks of dry weather right around wheat harvest, which was the end of June, beginning of July, didn't seem to affect it that much. Really slowed down the full season beans, but they have bounced back amazing. And now we're getting thunderstorms at least to a week.
So, with this rain now, what are you seeing? Any diseases showing up? Any problems with that?
No, and that's amazing. I've always used fungicide and insecticide. Mexican leaf beetles have really been after my soybeans in the years past. And this year, with the crop consultant and myself walking the fields, we have found no insect damage at all. And pretty much no leaf disease whatsoever in the full season soybeans. Now, with the corn, was roughly, I always struggle with those different stages, Let's say it was between my knee to my shoulder. It was 5 foot, not quite 4 foot tall. I went in with Trivipro, and that seemed to really help it. And I'm seeing no leaf diseases on the corn.
Yeah, that Trivipro is pretty good. The nice thing is it's got three different modes of action. You know, over the last few years, we've really seen the companies make a major push. So instead of just one mode of action, we're getting two. And now like Trivipro, there's Nexacor for wheat. There are a number of these fungicides coming out today that have three modes of action. And even if some of the technology in there is old, because a couple of those products, a couple of those active ingredients in Trivipro, they've been out for a long time. But you put one new one with two old ones, you got a pretty broad spectrum, not much chance for disease resistance, some decent residual. Yeah, I mean, it's a good fungicide. It's shown up well in our trials too.
Yeah. Now, we had some really wet, cold conditions on was May 3 to May 10. And I did have to go in and I replanted my 3-1 soybeans that I needed to replant.
Mm-hmm.
I replanted them with 2.5s this time.
Yep.
And right now, you can't see the difference. So hopefully I hit the nail on the head with the maturity there.
Yeah, good. Well, that's good. Yeah, it's always a challenge when you get some adverse weather. You have to do some replanting, and you don't know exactly what to do for maturities because you get some people that'll say, oh, continue to plant the full season, and other guys go, well, no, you need to go way earlier and everything else. But, yeah, well, that's good. It sounds like it's turning out fine.
It's pretty good. My one question I wanted to ask you, last year when I was talking to you, we kind of debated whether to use a flex head with an auger or a draper, and you were saying that you were staying with the auger. Did you continue, or did you go to a draper head?
As we've continued looking at this, we are going to run one draper, I think, on the farm this fall, and one that is not. And so I'll be able to tell you a lot better about 2 months from right now. So we'll see. But
okay.
I can tell you most people – talk draper, really like it, and I'm kind of excited to run a bunch. Well, hey, we got to get running, but thanks a lot for the call today. Really appreciate it.
Thank you.
You bet.
It is Farmer Friday and Ag PhD Radio. We're taking your calls and questions throughout the rest of the show at 844-44-AG-PHD. We'll be right back.
With DuPont Approach Prima Fungicide, there's a difference. A real difference you can actually see in the health of your crops and the health of your bottom line. From superior coverage to more reliable performance, Approach Prima delivers long-lasting results against hard-to-control diseases like frog eye leaf spot, while the preventive and curative action gives you the application flexibility you need for greater yield potential. So see the difference of Approach Prima for yourself. Visit approachprima.dupont.com to learn more. Always read and follow label directions.
Every farmer knows that in order to be profitable, you need to maximize the return on your crop input investments. Hi, I'm Scott Harms, an agri-risk specialist with Grain PhD. Without an effective and flexible strategy, your grain marketing plan gets stuck in the mud. With Grain PhD, you get the clarity and guidance a solid marketing plan needs. Our free GrainBridge software simplifies your cost-profit analysis, and our risk specialists are here to help you develop your plan. Sign up today at grainphd.com.
If there's one thing farmers know, it's to expect the unexpected. And when the unexpected happens, you need to change plans right now. Not only does AgroLiquid have the crop nutrition products you need anytime, anywhere your crop would benefit from added nutrition, but we also have an outstanding team of field agronomists ready to help you determine the best use of your fertilizer dollar. Find your winning team at agroliquid.com.
Farmers value their independence. So does FMC. We understand the freedom to choose the best products for your fields is key to your operation's success. With the exclusive agronomic and economic incentives of the new FMC Freedom Pass program, you're free to choose your favorite seed and protect your crops all season long with proven FMC products. To learn more, visit fmcagus.com/FMC Freedom Pass or contact your authorized retailer today. Always read and follow label directions.
Zero, zilch, zip. That's the total cases of resistance documented with Manzate ProStick. That's right, zero, zilch, zip. Not all fungicides can say this, but Manzate ProStick from UPI can. This multi-site fungicide not only controls walnut blight, it plays a critical role in delaying the development of resistance, which is why Manzate ProStick is the foundation fungicide in all walnut blight control programs. For a recommendation, contact your PCA. Always read and follow label directions.
Every season, you try to raise the bar to achieve your best corn yield ever, but disease can stand in the way. Like gray leaf spot, northern corn leaf blight, anthracnose leaf blight, and southern rust. New Dilaro fungicide can stop them. Two different modes of action work on the diseases for the entire spray interval, delivering best-in-class dual mode of action residual efficacy for extended performance. It's the help you need for personal best yields. Keep raising the bar with Dilaro from Bayer. Always read and follow label instructions.
Come on in. The Ag PhD mailbag is about to begin.
Welcome back. You're listening to Ag PhD Radio, broadcasting from the Morton Studio. It's Farmer Friday, so we're taking your calls and questions at 844-44-AG-PHD, or you can email us radio@agphd.com, and that's where I'm going to right now because I got an email from Matt in Indiana. He said, "Hi, I've been farming in Northwest Indiana for about 25 years. Just been listening to your show now the past couple of years. I've gained a much better understanding of agronomy, soil health, and plant nutrition." Hey, thanks, Matt. We really appreciate that. He said, "I've got a question for you, and I've sent you a lime analysis, soil tests, plant tissue tests, and pictures of the field, both above and below ground." Tell you what, Matt, that is the most thorough question that we've had so far. I mean, as far as having all the backup material that we may possibly ask for. So we really appreciate that. It helps us get to the bottom of something a little quicker. So Matt says in his area, they've been dry for the past 6 weeks, only about an inch of precipitation. Some areas of the field were green and healthy, right next to areas severely stressed by the dry weather with dead leaves on the lower half of the plant. And he pulled tissue analysis, it's labeled green and yellow, so you can see what the difference is between the two. He said the field has very little variability in soil type and topography, no tile, no irrigation, no drainage ditches. They did apply a ton of lime last fall, and lime analysis, of course, you have. Corn and soybeans are planted in this field. Both are showing the same symptomology that there's parts of the field green and parts that are yellow. They did a 2x2 on both sides of the row with the planter, and they put on a side dress application of nitrogen on the corn, 160 pounds of actual N. And with their soil penetrometer, when it's not super, super dry, they can usually get down to about 18 inches before they hit a real hard layer. All right, got any ideas, Brian?
Oh, I have lots of ideas. So the first thing that I'm going to talk about is the lime that he applied, even though I realize that's not the first question he asked. But when I was going through this stuff, only 31% was passing through a 60 sieve. And really, I'd like that to be 100%, not 31. Now, 31's fine. It's just the lime isn't worth much. So I hope you're getting a really good deal on the lime. It's not going to change your pH much. It's not going to change it super quick. So, you know, you can use it if there's no other source. But for me, I'm going to try to look for another source, or I'm going to do everything I can to get that lime practically free because it's not real great. In terms of the tissue analysis, nitrogen was the biggest one that was low in terms of the major nutrients, N, P, and K. If you look at his soil tests, he's got, it really varies. He's got as high as 105 parts per million on a P1 phosphorus test. That's great. I want, 80 to 100 parts per million at least, and then we say we're great. One of the things that ties real tightly to phosphorus is zinc. So when I see, let's say, 100 parts per million of phosphorus, I should be seeing somewhere around 10 parts per million of zinc. On your tests, I'm seeing 1 part per million of zinc. Your sulfur levels are low. Your zinc levels are low. Your manganese levels are low. Your copper is low. Your boron's low. So your potassium is pretty good. You got an average of about 6% base saturation K. Great. Your phosphorus, other than just a few spots in the field that are down to 18, 30, 26, I mean, those are not good, but you got a bunch that's good. So my point is, it looks like over the years, you've had a nice focus on P and K. Excellent. Great job. You're addressing the pH, which really isn't bad. I don't know if you even needed that ton of lime other than one spot in the field that was a 5.7 pH. But the big thing is it's time to now start focusing on some of the micronutrients and also on lack of nitrogen. But you know, one of the big things that we see when whenever we look at soil tests and plant tissue tests, and exactly what he said, he's got some areas that are great and some other areas that are not so great. Well, when you start looking at the soil tests and the variance here, you go, So I was just looking at the first page. Now I get to the second page, third page of the soil test. There is a tremendous amount of variance. I've got some other tests here where he's way over 100 on parts per million of phosphorus, and then I've got some tests where he's under 15. So we need to clean those things up. We got to get all that variance out of there because you absolutely can get a lot more yield. But yeah, I'm going to invest. If I owned your ground, I'd invest heavily today, well, this fall, in a bunch of these micronutrients, zinc, manganese, copper, boron, and get some sulfur out there. They're all lacking. And one of the reasons why you may be showing as low as you are in the nitrogen deal, it's not that your crop is lacking nitrogen as much as it's lacking sulfur and some of these micros that help nitrogen utilization in the plant. So yes, number of suggestions there, number of things you can look forward to or you can work on as you go forward, but the big expense, the big things like the P, at least in most areas of the field, and the K in most areas of the field, it seems like you've done a pretty good job addressing that.
Hey, thanks for the questions, Matt. And yeah, if you got more questions about that, just let us know. Got a question from Marty here in North Carolina. He says, what is your answer to controlling Italian ryegrass in oats? I was just watching the wheels turn with Brian as he's thinking, yeah. Italian ryegrass, okay. And then I said oats, and it's like, oh, no, I don't think there's anything labeled to control Italian ryegrass in oats.
No, and I'm not.
There are some options in wheat.
Well, I was going to say, yeah, I'm not trying to be a jerk here or anything, but what I would say is the best option to controlling ryegrass in oats is to plant soybeans.
Use Roundup or something like that to post-emerge, pre-emerge herbicides to wipe it out.
Yes, you got to use rotation. A multifaceted program, crop rotation, get rid of it, and then you can go back to your oats.
Otherwise, your only option is burn down. That's it, burn down or tillage. I mean, those are the only two things that you got if you're for sure going to plant oats. Just don't have a whole lot of options. Hey, thanks for the question, Marty. We appreciate that. I got an interesting one here. This comes from Southern California. Didn't leave his name, but he said, I'm just wondering about what's happening with the salads at McDonald's, what type of disease they're having a problem with, and how did that start? Is that something that we need to worry about in the food chain? Hey, thanks for the question. We appreciate that. They did have an issue, I think, last month, with Cyclospora parasite. Basically, they found some lettuce that must have been contaminated with fecal matter somewhere. And when we think about manure applications, people are nervous about them, and certainly with cities that are using human waste and processing it to be used in an agricultural setting.
I don't really worry about those things that much. This looks like, to me, a fluke deal and something got contaminated later.
Completely.
When we talk about manure and compost and all those types of things, we're treating the soil first, and then we're usually planting the crop, and everything's just fine.
It's a long time between harvest and application. And this sounds to me like maybe there were some common trucks or equipment.
Something.
Didn't get cleaned. You know, like Brian said, it's a fluke thing because, well, it hardly ever happens. So,
right. You think about all these third world countries and they have things like this happen every single day. I mean, sometimes we have to stop and step back and just say, man, we're fortunate to live where we do in the United States or in Canada. And we don't very often have to worry about those types of things. The good news with that whole deal is it doesn't sound like anybody died, just some people got sick. So hopefully they get that cleaned up. But no, I don't know that there was anything any farmer could have done about that.
Hey, you know, one thing too to give for farmers here for some information is composting, Brian. You mentioned compost or manure, and there's a big difference there because a lot of times by going through that composting process, a lot of those parasites and disease type things are killed because the manure is heated up for an extended period of time.
Yep. Yeah, absolutely.
So you're going to hear more about compost for that reason and many more coming up. Hey, thanks for the question, though. Really appreciate that. And the way I understand it, McDonald's wiped all those salads away and went to a different supplier and solved the problem. Okay, I got one from Robert. He said, I was watching your show. You were talking about grass clippings. I love the video. And just a rule of thumb for lawn care is you normally get 15% of the total nitrogen back over various cuttings. Hey, thanks for watching the show, Robert. We appreciate that. And thanks for the feedback. Yeah, I think leaving the clippings on the lawn, there's many benefits. One of them is certainly getting that fertility value back. It's Farmer Friday on Ag PhD Radio. Still time to get your call in at 844-44-AG-PHD. We'll be right back after this.
Avoid the V-shaped pattern of injury caused by chemical buildup in your booms. The Express End Cap from Hypro eliminates the dead ends that lead to herbicide buildup and provides easy access to your booms, giving a complete flush between applications. Hypro. Helping you spray better.
Want to cut production costs without losing yield? The Soil Warrior can reduce trips across the field, optimize nutrient placement, and improve soil health. So you can lower production costs without losing yield. See what makes the Soil Warrior different and better at SoilWarrior.com.
This is Dave Robbins reporting from what can only be described as a cornfield under attack. With me is Jim Stafford, a local corn grower. Jim, what's happening here?
Mites. Banks, two-spotted, and carmine, you name it, this corn is under attack.
What are the plans, if any, to deal with this serious situation?
Well, we're not going to stand for it. We're going to fight the mite.
How?
ZLSC Miticide. Just one application by Grounder Air gives long-lasting mite control. Now that field corn, popcorn, corn for seed, and corn grown for silage are all labeled, mites don't stand a chance.
But what about their eggs?
ZLSC affects mites in all stages, even eggs.
What kind of timetable are we talking about?
ZLSC reaches mites under the leaf where they feed and hide with translaminar activity. For long-lasting protection after a single application, apply ZLSC at early threshold or as a preventative treatment.
ZLSC. It lasts so mites can't. Contact your local Valent representative or Valent authorized retailer for more information. Always read and follow label instructions.
If there's one thing farmers know, it's to expect the unexpected. And when the unexpected happens, you need to change plans right now. Not only does AgroLiquid have the crop nutrition products you need anytime, anywhere your crop would benefit from added nutrition, but we also have an outstanding team of field agronomists ready to help you determine the best use of your fertilizer dollar. Find your winning team at agroliquid.com.
Hey, Bill, any advice to control tough weeds and rootworms?
That's easy, Jim. Buy two, save three.
Wait, for weeds and rootworms?
Buy two, save three. Combine your Impact or new Impact Z herbicide purchase with a qualifying insecticide and save $3 per acre.
Buy two, save three. That is good advice.
For details, go to buy2save3.com. Impact, Impact Z, and Buy 2 Save 3 are trademarks owned by Amvac Chemical Corporation. All rights reserved. Impact Z is a restricted-use pesticide. Always read and follow label instructions.
With Preaxor's Xemium brand fungicide in your soybeans, it's hard to know which comes first, disease control or plant health. Preaxor fungicide is proven to deliver both with consistent performance, so your soybean crops get plant health benefits like growth efficiency and stress tolerance, plus longer-lasting disease protection, all contributing to maximum yield potential. Grow smart with BASF and Preaxor fungicide. Talk to your retailer today. BASF, we create chemistry. Always read and follow label directions.
Listening to Ag PhD Radio on Farmer Friday, right in the middle of the Ag PhD mailbag time. Taking your questions, radio at agphd.com or by phone, 844-44-AG-PHD. Got one from Kyle here. He said, I'm sending in some pictures because I'm having a hard time deciding on what's happening on these leaves. I'm right at R1, and I'm curious if this is a disease or some other issue. Thanks for your help. Hey, appreciate it, Kyle. And yeah, we've got one picture that we printed off here. It looks like there was a couple more that I didn't see. Maybe
so. What did you
the
think?
Best
Aaron?
One. Well, if it is a disease, it could potentially be Gosses, but it's normally something that we see starting from a wound of some sort on a leaf. I don't really see a wound, so it's hard to tell from that picture. I would recommend sending it into the university and having them ID it.
Yep.
Certainly, if you see it spreading, that might make it easier to identify. If it's a bacterial disease like Goss's, well, there isn't much you can do about it. But if it is a fungal disease, you could spray a fungicide. But here's the thing. If you spray a fungicide after you've got a lot of infection going on, you may be able to stop it a little bit with the triazole, but you're not going to heal that tissue that's already infected. That tissue's gone.
Yeah, so that's why we talk all the time about, in order to get the best return on investment on fungicide, you got to spray early. If you miss the timing, it may still pay. Might not, but it may still pay, but you've already given up a bunch of yield. So that kind of stinks. And the healthier we can keep that plant longer into the growing season, in other words, if we can delay the onset of any disease, even by 2 or 3 weeks, that generally helps yield quite a bit. So I'm just trying to say, if a late season, really late season disease does set into your crop, generally speaking, the yield loss isn't nearly as bad as when that disease shows up earlier. So, yeah, spraying earlier is often better. It doesn't look to me like a disease, but it might be. It looks to me like some type of damage, but I'm looking at one picture. If I was out walking in a field, then I could get a lot better understanding of that. But to Darren's point, whenever you have questions on these things, Darren's better at it than me, but I have a really difficult time identifying for sure exactly which disease it is in corn or soybeans or even wheat sometimes. So just send that stuff into the plant pathologist and they can identify it for you for sure.
You can also look at the Ag PhD Corn Diseases app. Yes. It's a free download. It's great information from the American Phytopathological Society. We worked on it with them, and you can kind of get some better ideas of, you can look at pictures and hear descriptions about what each disease is going to look like and what kinds of things you're going to see on the plant. So that might be helpful too. I looked at the other couple of pictures that you sent to Kyle, and it's tough to tell much from them and just a couple of leaves, but that's something I would send in just to see what you can find out. All right, got one from Emily. She said, I have a lawn care company, and quackgrass has really gotten bad in our area. There's a product called Solitaire, which is a combination of quinclorac and sulfentrazone. It's got some effect, but it really doesn't kill the quackgrass. No. And I've essentially gone to using a sponge on a stick with glyphosate to have any long-term effects. Any better ideas you guys have?
Nope. Usually when people have quackgrass, we tell them kill the lawn, start over. But when you do kill the lawn, you got to make sure you have a very high dose of Roundup with a very low rate of water. We want very concentrated droplets. Now, the products that she mentioned in that combination are Drive and Authority, or Facet L in sorghum, if you're familiar with that, and Authority, or Spartan. Okay, well, Authority, Spartan, that doesn't do anything to grasses, hardly. I mean, a little bit, but it's no big deal. So it's really that Drive in there that can give you slight suppression. We talk about that product for crabgrass as well in lawns. On crabgrass, it's real good, but on quackgrass, all you're going to get is suppression, and it's just slight suppression.
All right. Thanks for the question and the feedback. Really appreciate that, Emily. Got a question from Kevin here in Southwest Missouri. He says, it is about time that I sprayed my Roundup beans with Roundup. I'm wondering if I could supplement or use some UAN solution or some urea melted down along with the Roundup to help maybe side dressing the nitrogen on soybeans would be an option as well. What rate of nitrogen would you recommend and what method of applying it to my soybeans?
Most of the time, we don't see nitrogen applications helping a soybean crop. Where we do see it help is when you've got low organic matter levels. And the reason why I say low organic matter levels, don't forget that with organic matter, it mineralizes. It releases nitrogen as you go along through the season. So very often, if you have high organic matter levels, you get so much free nitrogen out of that, you're in good shape. So anyway, I would say if you've got low organic matter levels, if you've had poor soil conditions, let's say you got salt, you got high pH, you have poor drainage, any of those kind of things that will kill your soil microbes and prevent proper nodulation, well then sure, you're going to be short on nitrogen. The other thing would be really high yields. So those are the things I can think of off the top of my head when we would recommend nitrogen. So if you're talking about a 40 bushel crop, you already have fairly decent levels of organic matter in your soil and pretty healthy soil. The odds that adding more nitrogen, the odds that that pays for you are really, really slim. So if it's me, I'm not spending the money. You can sure try some. And what we would tell you is maybe try 50 pounds, do it in some strips, and see if that helps in terms of yield. When the plant needs that nitrogen is especially at R3, R4, so first pod, full pod, that type of thing, and through fill. You may need it a little bit at R1, R2, first flower and full flower, but it's really that podding and filling time where it's going to need a tremendous amount of nitrogen. So that's kind of what I'm looking at. But to make a specific recommendation to you, that's hard with just a little bit of information I've gotten.
All right. Thanks a lot for the question. Really appreciate that, Kevin. Got one here from Kim. Kim says, we have a hay field that we would like to boost before the next crop. The extension person in our area said it would be beneficial to put on nitrogen, phosphate, and micronutrients. We have approximately 38 acres in this one field we want to try this on. Now, on your show, you've talked about products to use between cuttings on hay, and just wondering which products you would recommend for this application. Our hay field is a mix of alfalfa, timothy, brome, and orchard grass.
And we don't have any soil tests or tissue tests, right?
Well, no. And that'd be exactly where I'd start, Kim. I'd say, you know what? Let's just start from the beginning because you're interested in applying more nutrients to the field. And in order to get the best return on your investment, you have to see what nutrients you might be short in.
Right. Otherwise, we're just completely guessing.
So what I would suggest, you've got a 38-acre field. I would probably break that up into at least four zones, if not eight zones. I would probably grid sample the field if you just chop it up into even blocks and set grid points out there. Then I'd go right to those grid points and pull soil samples in each of those
areas.
Yeah,
there's no way I'm going four. But, I mean, 2.5 or 5 acre grids, that's what I would probably tell you. We do 1 acre grids on our farm. You probably don't have to go that far. But here's the other thing. When we look at what you have out there for hay, alfalfa is terribly sensitive to soil pH. So rather than even starting with NP, K, micros, all those kind of things, don't get me wrong, they're all super important. But I'm also going to think an awful lot about what's my soil pH. And if, let's say, my soil pH is really low, then I would try to maybe get some lime out there to get that addressed. But yeah, in terms of throwing phosphorus out, phosphorus doesn't move well in the soil. Some of the micronutrients don't move well in the soil. So to do a little bit of foliar feeding, maybe. Phosphorus doesn't go into the leaf real well. Some of the micronutrients do. And nitrogen certainly goes into the leaf, and it goes into the soil, and it moves through the soil. So I would say your odds of getting a return on investment on the nitrogen application, very high. On the phosphorus, very low. And on the micronutrients, all depends on if you need those or not. You know, I might think about boron because that's leachable. I'd think about sulfur, and I'd think about nitrogen. Those are probably the three that I'd be putting out there. And then if you are really short, yeah, you can try some other things, but you got to start with soil tests and possibly even tissue tests.
Hey, thanks for the question, Kim. Really appreciate that. Last question from Chuck in Montana. He said, I'm a daily listener to your radio program.
Awesome, thanks.
What different information will I get in the Ag PhD Insider magazine?
Well, we go more in depth on certain topics, and also we have a bunch of different guest articles in there. Lots of good stuff. You can check out Ag PhD Insider magazine at agphdinsider.com if you would like. It's been a lot of fun just starting that magazine up. It's a great way to kind of supplement what we do on television and radio.
Thanks for the question, Chuck. We really appreciate that. Thanks for listening. Thanks to everyone who called or wrote in with questions today, and thanks to you for listening as well. Be sure to tune in each weekday for more Ag PhD Radio.